It's time to meet the artists. Our guest is Steve Ward, author of the new book, Artists of Color, Ethnic Diversity and Representation in the Victorian Circus, published by Modern Vaudeville Press. Steve has a decades-long background in education, theater, and clowning, and has directed international youth circus festivals in the UK, Europe, and Brazil. He also ran his own award-winning youth circus. Now retired, he is a writer focusing on educational circus and historical aspects of the circus tradition. Here's our chat with Steve. My guest today is writer and historian Steve Ward, author of the new book, Artists of Color, Ethnic Diversity and Representation in the Victorian Circus. Steve has had decades-long background in education, theater, and clowning, and has directed international youth circus festivals in the UK, Europe, and Brazil. He also ran his own award-winning youth circus. Now retired, he's a writer focusing on educational circus and historical aspects of the circus tradition. Steve, thank you. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for inviting me, Kim.
I wanted to ask you if the Black Lives Matter movement inspired you to write about the history of Black people in Victorian circus.
Yeah, I thought long and hard about this. I think it was the case of the Black Lives Matter movement sort of reinforced my belief that this subject need to be written about. I've been researching and writing various books on aspects of the cultural history of the circus for several years now. And in all my researches, I kept coming across reference to Black and other ethnic minority performers. But the more I tried to find out about them, there was very little information. And with the events of, particularly in the UK, in 2016, the Black Lives Matter movement came to the fore and then gathered strength over the sort of subsequent few years. And this was at a time when I was sort of formulating an idea to write the book. And it sort of reinforced this idea that this was a story that desperately needed to be told. So while the BLM movement didn't necessarily inspire it, it certainly reinforced my belief that it was a subject that needed exploring.
Wow. Yeah, that makes sense. Especially you kind of like jumped on my next question by mentioning how difficult it was to find information about Black circus artists at the time and other ethnicities. What do you think the reason is for that?
I think there are several reasons. I think historically, the circus has been predominantly seen as a white art form. And whereas there were many Black and ethnic minority performers in the Victorian circus, they were very often sidelined to the margins of history when it comes to recording the history of the circus. And it focused mainly upon white performers, Eurocentric and sort of American performers. And they disappear. They get referred to in one-liners, such as the Black trapeze artist or the Great African Rope Dancer. And it's taken quite a bit of research and trawling through archive material and a lot of trawling through old newspapers to piece these stories together. One or two of them were extremely well known, and one or two have been fairly well recorded. The first Black circus owner in the UK was a man named Pablo Funk. Or Fonk, I'm not quite sure how you pronounce his name. And he's an iconic Black figure of that period. And there's quite a lot of information about him. But there were other Black circus and ethnic circus circus managers at the time, such as Joseph Hillier. And very, very little is written about him. He's disappeared from the records almost. And you have to really dig to find information on these people. George Christoph was another Black circus owner of the time in the Victorian era. And again, it took a lot of digging to find out exactly how he came to be a manager. And this is part of the problem, is that because, particularly in the UK, you had a very Anglo-centric view of the world, with a strict racial hierarchy, with white Anglo-Saxon at the pinnacle and right down to sub-Saharan African towards the base of the pyramid. So anybody who didn't fall within the white Anglo-Saxon image that many of the Victorians had got consigned to the margins of history.
I'm so glad you did this research and found that there were amazing contributors to circus that were outside of that little group of white people. What is something that you learned in the process of writing this book that you hope that readers will take away from reading it?
I think the key thing, Kim, is that there were many, many black and ethnic performers that underpinned the development of the Victorian circus. And I think it's very important in any art form that we need to understand the history of that art form in order to inform where it goes in the future. And I think for many people, both within the indigenous white people in the UK I've spoken to, and also to black and ethnic performers I've spoken to, they've had no idea about this rich cultural history, this black cultural history that's ingrained in the circus. And I think that the one thing I have discovered is the fact that there were so many who contributed to the development of the circus. And if people read the book and take that away with them, then I think that's, for me, that's very important.
I would say so. And also the fact that, I mean, I hope you will agree, Victorian circus was very foundational in our understanding of what circus is today, right? And to know that there's a huge percentage of the artists being, you know, kind of cut out of the historical references is really strange.
I think it's very important to understand that because of the nature of society at the time, because of the nature of circus being a very sort of marginal art form in a sense itself, it was sort of beyond normal society. That these things, unless you were a very, very well-known name, you just got consigned to sort of the underlay of history. I think things are moving now. Things are changing. I mean, like, you've got shows like I recently watched The Clown, Veronica Brown's program that she made, a film that she made, celebrating black female circus artists, which I thought was really, really sensational. You've got Omnium, which is sort of promoting diversity. You've got Jonathan Lee Iverson, the last ringmaster, and his show. And I think certainly your side of the pond, you know, things are developing rapidly. And I think there is this recognition. I don't know if it's gone quite that far here in the UK as yet, and I'm probably going to get slapped down for saying that by somebody. But I think there needs to be this awareness, certainly in the UK, that there was this rich culture that needs drawing upon and developing, so that we can take the circus forward into the next millennium.
For sure. One of the most fascinating circus artists for me that you profile in your book is Miss Lala. Can you tell us something about her and her work that was admired in her time?
Yeah, Miss Lala is quite a popular figure. A lot of people want me to talk about her. I think because the two facts: one, she was a woman in a man's society, and second, that she was a black performer. Miss Lala was born in the 1850s in northern Germany in a place called Stettin. It's now part of Poland. Her father was an African American called William Brown. Her mother was of German origin, Marie Borchardt. Why William Brown was in northern Germany at that period is not known. There are two theories. One, that he was a performer himself, which is a possibility. And the other one, that he was a mariner of some description and arrived at Stettin, which was near the coast, and stayed. And he'd obviously been there a while, because Bislala, who was born, she had a long name, actually. She was born Anna Albertina Olga Brown, and she was very often referred to as Olga. She was the youngest of several children, so obviously William Brown had been there for some while. And Olga began performing around the age of 9 years old. And then by the time she got to her teens, she had moved to Paris and was making a name for herself as an aerialist. as she developed her skills, one of her more well-known acts was that she would hang from the trapeze bar by her knees, and then from a jawpiece, a mouthpiece, she would then have a cast iron cannon suspended from her jaws. And not only that, it would then be lit and fired while she was still holding it. And this was quite a sensational act, which was when she was about to come to England, it hit the press. It was apparently quite abhorrent in certain sections of the press, where it was basically said it was not an act worthy of seeing, and certainly not worthy of something a lady should be doing. But when she did actually come to the UK, it took the place by storm, and she became very, very popular. She later went on to appear with a female partner called, who went by the professional name of Kyra, or Kyra. And this was a stage name for somebody with a totally unpronounceable name of Theophila Zetsky, or something to that effect. She was an Austrian. And whereas Miss Lala was very, very black in skin coloration, Kyra was very, very pale. And they formed an aerial act known as the Black and White Butterflies, or sometimes the Two Butterflies. And they toured France and beyond, and appeared in England as well to much acclaim. Olga, Miss Lala, married... sorry, can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, my screen went blank at that moment. Sorry. That's okay. Miss Lala married an African-American called Emmanuel Woodson, and he was a contortionist, and he was in Europe at the time. They married and had a couple of children, and they then went on to tour quite widely throughout the world. They certainly went down as far as Australia and New Zealand. I'm not sure. I have no record that they went to the States, as it happens. And sort of Olga took on a more managerial role, a directing role of a Silver Ladder act with the younger members. And last heard of Miss Lala was in 1919. Her husband died in 1915. He had taken on the management of a variety theatre in Brussels in Belgium. And after he died, she attempted to go to America, but had a passport application refused at least twice. And the last record we have of her was in 1919 on her last passport application form. And after that date, she disappears from the records completely. My own suspicion is that she may have died in Europe, in Belgium, and possibly something I need to try and track down is that she may have been buried in the same cemetery as her husband. That would seem a strong possibility, but that needs further research. Always space for research, always something new to find out.
Yes, it's an ongoing project, but I'm really excited about your book. Can you tell us where folks can get it?
Sure. You can get it directly from the publisher. That's Modern Vaudeville Press, and their website is www.modernvaudevillepress.com/artists/. That'll take you directly to the website. You can, of course, buy it on that famous internet book site. Am I allowed to say it?
Sure.
Sure. Okay. You can get it on the Amazon site across all domains. And any good bookshop, if you go in there and you quote the title and my name, they should be able to get hold of a copy for you.
Great. Thank you so much, Stephen, for being our guest today. I really appreciate the chat with you and learning about your research. And I wish you great success with your new book.
Thank you very much. And you're more than welcome. I totally enjoyed speaking to you.
Oh, hello. A quick note of correction here. Earlier in the interview with Steve Ward, he refers to The Crown as being produced by Veronica Brown. It's actually Veronica Blair, also the woman who produces the Uncle Junior Project, which is an amazing project you should check out. That's it for episode 2 of the Press Pass podcast with the editor, your front row access to what's happening in the performance world and a monthly circus news.